Tristan and Sue here yet again for another podcast in the series, Talking the Dis Out of Dyslexia. And this is the second series in which we really are focusing on Davis learning strategies. These are the strategies that classroom teachers can use with their pupils from kindergarten upwards. And today we are delighted to introduce Chelsea Flett to you. You've got a whole bunch of questions for her. So welcome, Chelsea. Thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Chelsea, we met just about a year ago when you joined the Davis Learning Strategy Workshop here in Vancouver. But I really want to start with, what was your experience like in school? Do you feel you ever had a learning challenge?
Oh, it's interesting. We talk about this with my colleagues. So I actually teach in the area that I went to school in as a child in Nelson. And I feel like I had a very smooth educational experience. Although looking back, I had a lot of anxiety around kind of traditional models of testing and that kind of thing. But I feel like I was able to figure out how I learned, and I was just a very diligent student. I also wasn't overly concerned with getting straight A's or anything. So I did enjoy my life a lot and, you know, got B's and C pluses and got harder in university. Found my undergrad quite challenging. And then I kind of came back into really knowing myself when I did higher education post undergrad.
What was your method of learning that you found out that was good for you? Because you were saying that it was a challenge, but you found your way of learning. What was your way of learning?
Basically, in talking about learning styles, so you've got audio learners, visual learners, kinesthetic learners, I realized quite quickly I needed to engage myself in the doing of things before I could really sink into understanding stuff. So there were kids in the class that would just listen to an hour-long lecture, and I had no idea how they were able to do so well on tests. Yeah, kinesthetic. When I do, I learn better. I probably fine-tuned it more in university just because I did an English degree, so it was all lecture style. So I became a very excellent note taker. I was quite meticulous with my learning, maybe even to the point of like bordering on OCD tendencies with my learning, like color coordination, and I would get anxiety about it. Looking back now, I would record things now. I would have just recorded a lecture, but at the time I didn't.
When I was going to school, I kind of wish I did the same, was record it, because I learned the same as you. I have to do. I could sit there and listen to an entire lecture and I'll pick up three or four things.
Yeah, that's an interesting piece. And I think about that when I teach, just like going on and talking. There are so many kids that miss so much of that. Mm-hmm. It's funny, my teachers when I was growing up always told me I should be a teacher, and I never wanted to be a teacher. I don't know why. And I think what drew me to teaching ultimately is I really love kids. I've always worked with kids and I love people. I like being around people. I'm quite social and extroverted. I like getting to know people. I think that's maybe what I love most in life is like connecting with others. So teaching seemed very logical to me. And actually, in the last semester of my undergrad, I went to Simon Fraser University. I had actually been going through a hard time and I needed a change, and I applied for a field school for my last semester, and I got in and I spent a whole term living in Indonesia at a dive resort studying environmental education. And it was there that I realized, I was like, oh my God, this is school? I could be a teacher if this is school. Like these two teachers got paid to take a group of us to Indonesia and we go diving every day and we learn about nature. And that was the conversation, right? Is to get kids to care about nature, you have to get them to love nature first. And so we worked within classrooms and I did a bunch of work with a nonprofit. And these are school-age children in Indonesia who many of them didn't ever go out and into the wild in that way, right? Like in our community that we lived in, everyone just threw their garbage bags into the ocean and there was no discussion of that kind of thing, which is privilege, right? To be able to talk about like where we put our garbage and sanitation and that kind of thing. So yeah, that's really what we were looking at.
That's really the way to learn things.
That kind of really started me on the path. in my mind, I think schooling was so traditional and structured because that's what my experience had been, even though my experience was quite lovely because I grew up in a rural town. So I spent a lot of time outside, but desks in rows and following rules, I found it quite boring and I never wanted to participate in that system. And then seeing another way of teaching and being a student, I felt like, okay, if this is possible, maybe I can find my own way within teaching. And then now I'm at a school that, even though we're in the public system, it's an adjacent school to the public system. We talk a lot about values. It's a heart-centered, relationship-based program where we really work with families for long periods of time. It's multi-age. So I feel like I can still be myself and still kind of push against those edges of the traditional system that I dislike. And now I'm with a bunch of colleagues who want to do the same thing too. So at the school that I'm at, it's a K-9 school, and I do learning support. So I actually get to work with all of the ages. We call the K-1 class the seedlings. We have one seedlings class and then four elementary classrooms, which are multi-ages from grades 2 to 6 in those rooms. And then we have the middle school, which is multi-age grades 7, 8, 9. I move between all those classes based on need and what the teachers are wanting.
How did you find out about the DLS program and what drew you to it?
Yes, the school I work at, Wildflower, there was an educator at the school who's still there now, and she had had a student who she could not figure out. Something was going on. She didn't know what it was. They tried all the traditional testing. She didn't feel satisfied with it. The kid was still struggling in school. Right. And she found the Davis program. And so she read all the books and she was in contact with Rocky Point Academy in Calgary. And basically she kind of picked it up and started working with this child. And then I believe the child's family sent him to Rocky Point Academy. And when he came back from that, she was amazed at what had changed in him in terms of his learning. And at that point she was sold. So she's basically ordered all the books. We have them in our school. She passes them out to parents. And then 2 years ago, not being attached to a specific classroom, she was like, I think you should take this piece on because you work with all the kids. Thanks. And so her and I work pretty closely together because she's kind of got the history of it and quite a deep understanding of it. Plus, she's been a teacher for a long time, so she's seen a lot of different kinds of learning diversity within kids.
Yeah.
So that's how I found out about it.
That's so cool.
When I went to Vancouver, I had no expectations, but I think it was a little bit what I thought it would be. I had hoped that it would be hands-on as opposed to just someone talking at us, which is different than most teacher prodies. Usually it's someone's lecturing and you're listening and taking notes. So it was very helpful to just go through the program and make the letters and practice with our partners and do all of that.
Would you think it would be worthwhile for this DLS method to be introduced into the mainstream educational system?
Oh, yeah. And I mean, the woman who I was talking about earlier, the teacher at our school, she actually tried to get our district on board with adopting DLS. And so you and I think I talked about this briefly with you at the workshop. It's interesting, like there's some judgment on it, academic judgment of research to support, to get people to put money towards it. So she didn't get very far there. But I mean, all of our classrooms, because we all have known about DLS for years, all of them basically use it as part of their early literacy programs. Because we have multi-age, we're teaching thematically and we teach in different ways because you have such a wide ability and age range. So within the literacy centers each day, Claywork is always in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. It's so great. And it's become normalized in the school. So it was really easy for me to do this work with the kids because they were already familiar with it. We have had some discussions at the school, like how do we propose this to the school board and how do we get them to understand that there's value in it? I mean, it's kind of tricky times with budgeting and COVID.
Yeah.
But I think the approach that we're taking is if we can do it really well at our school and become an example, and then other people start to be like, oh, what's that? I kind of want to know what that is.
Chelsea, that is my dream. The whole Dyslexic Society has an objective to prevent the challenges from arising. And my ultimate goal is to have a school district or maybe three schools running these DLS methods from K to three at least, and preferably throughout the school. And then we can gather data and we can, as you say, be an example. And when people see how effective it is and the success rates that we have, they will be clamoring to have these methods in their school as well. That would be the most fantastic thing that could possibly happen. And I'm very, very grateful to you for that.
Yeah, I think kids who go through the programs are such big advocates for it. And families too. I feel like our school district, there's a lot of weight within family and parent voices. So I'm hoping that that will happen and come from our school. And I mean, we have talked about as a staff, just collecting data ourselves and being in touch with you guys about it. My colleague, she's even like thrown around ideas sometimes of doing a PhD and having this as her focus for it.
So Chelsea, having been to one of these workshops, you'd had this two-day immersion and you'd learned how to deliver self-regulation tools and how to deliver alphabet mastery and reading exercises that do not rely on phonics, and also how to master words so that you can give any word a three-dimensional model for the meaning, and then you have the spelling and you know how to say it. So all three parts of the word are covered. Having learnt all of that, how easy did you find it, or how difficult did you find it to take those methods back into the classroom?
I think the biggest thing was I already have an established relationship with all of the kids that I work with. So in my opinion, that is key. I do think that you could do it without having the relationship, but I think with the relationship, it deepens it. And I actually spent a whole month just doing the focusing strategies. I didn't even get to the clay work until after a month because I knew I needed the kids' buy-in. And I knew that they needed to feel safe to be vulnerable within their own learning, or else I wasn't going to get anywhere. And the kids that I had, some of them had very severe behavioral issues, and being in a bigger group was super challenging. So I actually came back, and it was a bit of a slow start because I was doing it in different classrooms. And then I'd have like three kids from the seedlings four times a week. And that became a little group. And then as people started to hear about it in the school, like the kids would be like, what are you doing with Chelsea? Why are you going? What's that clay stuff you're doing? I want to do it too. And then I actually started to have large groups, and it was really beautiful. One of the first couple meetings, one of the girls just shared about all the struggles that she has. She had come to our school from a more traditional school and had gotten in trouble a lot because she couldn't do the work like the other kids, and there wasn't patience for her learning needs. And so she came to our school and she just shared like very specific things. Like, when I look at words, sometimes they drip off the page. And as she started to share, some of the other little kids were like, hey, that happens to me too. I didn't know that anyone else had that happen to them. And so we really built up safety through sharing. And I loved the focusing strategies. So at the same time, I actually went into all the classrooms and did the focusing strategies with each room. So basically my goal was to go from K to nine and teach everybody the focusing strategies because it's going to be beneficial for everyone. And I would say things like, oh, if you're at the grocery store with your parent and you're frustrated, do this focusing strategy. Or like if your sibling is bothering you, you can do a focusing strategy. So it wasn't just about school and their learning. I was like, this is a life tool. Use it all the time. And I would do it with them. And so then the teachers picked that up. So throughout the whole school, we were using the same language. And then I pulled the individual group, and I really wanted to create it as something fun that they got to do with me outside of their classroom. And it worked to the point where when we went off for COVID and we went online, I still had Davis meetings on Zoom with families. And I maintained it from March until June on Zoom. And then when we went back to school, I'd do Zoom and then I'd have some kids physically in the classroom with me. And it was great. It was really, really wonderful. And I made up packages for everybody. So the alphabet, lowercase, uppercase, I did the shapes. I sent home a package of clay, some cutting tools. It was kind of fun. They all got these like little goodie bags, Davis goodie bags. And they all wanted the koosh balls. I didn't buy them all koosh balls. Yeah, the parents, they all knew what it was because I sent home a lot of documentation. It was important for us to let the parents know, like, this is what Chelsea's doing. Their teacher has requested that your child do this work. There's lots of diversity in why kids are going to this group. So the parents were really aware, but it became easier, I think, because I asked the parents to be on the Zoom call. So the parents really had to see, and I was doing it as well. I didn't want them to hand it off to me. I wanted them to be engaged because I wanted them to be able to do this at home, or if they were at the grocery store with their child, to look at them and ask them to do the release breath because they could see their child getting elevated, or to be like, what's your dial setting at? Oh, it's an 8? Why? Let's talk about that. Mm-hmm. And then it snowballed. Like, you say Davis at our school and the kids know, and most of the parents know too. They're all like, oh yeah, I've read the book. Yep.
Wow.
I mean, the kids were into it and they all know each other really well. So that's another thing. You're not having to work through the insecurities of kids kind of being in a, oh, I'm different, or, oh, I learned different. So this is weird. And we really work hard as a school to break down those barriers and just, you know, everyone is different in how they learn. And we all have great ways to learn things. And maybe it looks different than you. I was actually quite surprised at how well it went online. Well, and I think it's important too with learning is like learning isn't isolated. To learn how to focus doesn't just apply being in a classroom. You need to know that skill to be a functioning human out in the world. So the more ways that we can practice that in different environments, the better off we are as people. I'm hoping to start up the same thing in October, just not with the large groups. I'm going to have to do it within the learning pods.
Right.
And also still running things online with the kids that are at home.
Oh, I get you.
Oh, another thing I wanted to say, we have a couple ELL learners. Formerly, it was known as ESL, mm-hmm. English as a Second Language. Mm-hmm. And I think the Davis work is amazing for ELL students.
I agree.
And it can be less verbal, which I think would be helpful for people learning English for the first time. And I have an ELL group at the school, and I'll be doing Davis work with them. One little girl, she brought a book to one of our Davis meetings that explained how she was a diverse learner. And it was all about coming to understand herself more. So she read this little book to everybody and then talked about her own learning experience.
That's so valuable.
Mm-hmm. And important for the other kid to see her being quite vulnerable and saying, I really struggle. I don't understand what's going on in class. And I live my life like this. I can't read signs. I can't go over to friends' houses and watch subtitles on a movie. I don't understand texting. Yeah. So it really impacts her life. And she's done all these workarounds, but it's really beautiful now that she can just talk about it. So she's not hiding it anymore.
For our listeners, I need to explain, this is now part 2 of our podcast. If you'll remember, Chelsea told us that she took one of these Davis Learning Strategy courses. She went back into her school and she introduced the focus tool to the children in her groups. Then COVID hit and she used Zoom to keep in touch with the children. And also she encouraged the parents to join in. And then she was able to go back into school and she saw some children in person, but she also had some Zoom classes. And she ended up by saying that she was hoping to be able to do the same sort of thing in October. Well, now it is October. Chelsea, welcome. And please, could you tell us what you've been able to do or not do?
Yeah, I did some today. So I guess I feel like restrictions are a little bit more now than they were in June. Mm-hmm. So I'm having to be very careful because our classes are in learning pods. So I can't cross learning pods. So I've had to be creative. So it's less bigger groups, more smaller groups. Mm-hmm. And my job changes every year a little bit. So this year I'm doing literacy kind of across all of the grades. And so I'm actually able to weave it into other literacy strategies. So like like today, I had a group of grade threes and fours. I mean, we were doing like early literacy and I just made one of the stations, the Davis station. And I sat at that station and worked with them. I also do it with kids who, you know, like it's very clear that letters are being flipped. And so instead of more traditional ways of getting them to learn spelling, I just bust out the clay, which again is tricky in COVID. So I have a whole case of clay. So I break it off or I get an individual package and then I put it in a bag with the kid's name on it. And then it just stays in my room and I have all the resources laminated. So then I can wipe them off afterwards as well, or I just write their name on it.
That's important for everybody to know. I mean, you can still deliver the tools. You can still show your little groups how to do the release and how to do the focus and how to do the energy dial setting. And when it comes to making the letters, they can have their own clay and everything can be laminated.
Yeah, you just have to be a little, no sharing. No sharing.
That's so sad for children, isn't it? Have you managed any reading exercises yet?
No, no reading. My hope is that in October, I can kind of get my solid groups off the ground in the various classrooms and then really just kind of dig in and make it several times a week situation so that we can progress. I think that was hard in COVID. It's like I just got going and really got all the breathing exercises and dial setting and then just started the letters and then COVID hit.
Yeah.
The kids love to share, right? So wouldn't it be a good idea to have an online resource, get their parents to send an email, whatever words they're doing, something just to communicate the pictures, be like, oh, this is my image for this word today. What did you do?
That's a good idea. That would be kind of neat where kids could post almost.
Yeah.
So you're saying once they've mastered the letters and you've started some reading exercises and then they get into mastering words, you could have some sort of group sharing.
Let's say if they're doing words at home, they could take a picture and then their mom or dad could send an email to you and then you could do like a little show and tell.
Totally. And the kids really liked getting together. Is that kind of what you're tapping into as well? And the younger years, we call them the seedlings kids, which are kindergarten, grade one, they're all by themselves. So they don't have a pod. So that would apply to them particularly.
It's difficult when you have all the other modifications to consider.
Yeah.
Did you hear from the children if they'd been using any of those tools over the holidays?
Well, a lot of them did. I had one little boy today who was one of those kids that was super reluctant, wouldn't read, wouldn't write, was embarrassed, low confidence. And Davis just worked for him. And he started to get a ton of confidence. And now he's in grade four. And he is just like, oh, well, Chelsea does this like this, and we do this breathing exercise. I can help you do that. So now he's helping the little kids.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and he was definitely doing his work during the break. I've spoken to both his parents, and they've done a great job. The parents live in different households, and both mom and dad have the same stuff at their houses, and they do it at the same time with him, and he knows the routine at both their houses.
Brilliant.
Yeah, and then actually today, another example, a really tough little girl who was like an escape artist at school and she'd run away. And today I was working with kindergartner and this little girl in grade two comes up and she's looking and then she looks at me and she's, I think she'd be good at the clay work, Chelsea. She's mixing her B's and D's. I think she needs the clay. You should teach her that, but I can help. That little girl was doing the stuff all by herself. And she kind of lives in a chaotic house where no one would really ask her to do those things, but she does them on her own.
That's fantastic. Maybe that even helps give her a little bit of stability in a funny way.
Yeah, totally. And it's really good for her because it gave her this confidence. She still struggles with writing, but now she learns so well, or she deepens her understanding when she's able to teach other people and she likes doing it.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant. Brilliant. Yeah. I hope you get to listen to some of the other podcasts because there were two things that stuck out for me. In one podcast, Richard Whitehead, who's the head of Davis in the UK, he was telling us how important it is to put meanings behind those little trigger words, not simply to fill in the blanks so that we can think with them, because obviously if we don't have the picture, then we disorient, but also to take us to another level of learning. Because apparently memorization and rote learning takes you to one level. And when you have the meaning behind all these words, it takes you to another level where you can analyze and synthesize. And you're going to need that for high school and so on. I didn't have any idea about that. And Abigail, who was in the last podcast, she said that the research shows that whatever you do a lot of, when you go to sleep, your brain thinks that's important. So if you were playing video games all day, your brain thinks the video games are important and that's what it holds on to. But the stuff that isn't important, it lets go. But the best part of it is when you're making a model, yes, it takes longer. It's not like just writing the word out a few times. It's not just saying it a few times. You look it up in the dictionary, you make the model. And so it is a longer process. And therefore, your brain is going to think that's more important. And therefore, that's going to help it hold on to the information. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, that's really neat. Today, I'm like looking at a word that this little girl spelled and her B is a D. And I'm like, what is going on with that word? And she's looking at it. And then she went, can I have some clay? And then she built what she had written. And then she went, hang on a second. That's not the right letter. What could you do? She's like, I think I can flip it. She needed the thing to move around. And just that act alone is synthesizing the information.
Absolutely. That's fantastic. Oh, that's so exciting.
I think that's one of the parts I like the most, just the kids building. Because a lot of kids who struggle to learn also have sensory stuff too. And in a lot of school environments, that's not nurtured.
Mm-hmm. Well, particularly with printing and handwriting. So if you have a child who has supposedly got dysgraphia, if, for example, you were to ask them to draw a horizontal line, you would expect a line looking like the horizon, obviously. But if their focus is 90 degrees to their real eyes, then that's going to look like a vertical line. So I don't know how you can possibly help them with their printing, just forming the letters, unless they have the use of that focusing skill.
Yeah, totally.
Are people in your school, do they believe it's not going to be useful to keep holding on to this method?
No, people believe it's useful. I mean, some people don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. Oh, Chelsea does this thing.
Chelsea's school was the one where they wanted to go to the school district.
Yeah.
They're all pretty much on board, aren't they?
They are, and it's partly due to that one teacher who just problem solved years ago. It was 10 years ago, maybe 11 years ago, where she had that student and she couldn't figure the student out. And then they went to Rocky Point Academy and picked it up. So we've all kind of bought in, and the principal's super supportive. And then the parents, yeah, some parents, they're just kind of go, it's another thing my kid does. I don't really need to know about it. Mm-hmm. And then the parents who have seen quite a dramatic shift in their children are like, whoa, what's that? And I make a point. I send a letter home at the beginning of the school year saying your kid's doing this. So they're informed, but no, it's not a hard sell.
Chelsea, if there were a teacher listening who was thinking to themselves, gosh, this is yet another thing that I probably am interested in, but can I really take this on during COVID? What I would say to them is, fingers crossed, we're now able to do the actual workshop online. Would you say to them, sure, go for it?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, there's a little bit of logistical pieces, although not as much as I would be having, because if a classroom teacher takes it on, they have their own class. I would just have individual supplies for every kid.
Yeah.
And it's such a great tool. I do feel lucky to be at a school where process is really valued. So when I found taking a long time with all of this was very helpful to establish relationships. But I know that some teachers are just like flying through their days. So I would just try and start slow, do it piece by piece, start with the focusing strategies for a whole term, do it every day for a whole term.
My apologies to Chelsea and to the listeners for the rather abrupt end to this recording. We had our fair share of technical difficulties on this one. However, any information that you need regarding DLS, Davis Learning Strategies, please go to www.davislearn.com. There is a film about DLS made by DDA South Africa, which you will find on our YouTube channel. So if you go to YouTube and you type in the Whole Dyslexic Society, you will find that film. And it's very useful because it not only describes what happens, but it also tells you the financial advantage to using these methods. This is the last recording in our second series, and we hope that you've enjoyed what you've heard. We're looking forward to a third series, which will probably come out around Christmas time. And we would like to focus that series on the gift part of dyslexia. There's so much that we can talk about regarding the downside and what to do about the downside. But very often we forget that there is an incredible upside to this wonderful way of thinking and our ability to alter perception. So we will enjoy meeting some people who have used this wonderful ability to its full advantage and made them very successful at what they do. So until then, thank you for listening. Please share these podcasts widely. We need to get this message out there that everybody is learning able. Some people just don't learn the way they're taught. And we so appreciate you joining us. So until next time, please stay well. And we look forward to you joining our third series. Bye for now.